Welcome to another MHP podcast. My name is Calvin Tompkins with Mission Health Partners, and I am joined today by Dr. Adrian Sandler. Thanks for joining us.
Pleased to be here.
Dr. Sandler is from the Developmental and Behavioral Pediatrics Clinic with Mission Children's, and today we are exploring the diagnosis and management of suspected autism spectrum disorder. We have a co-management guide posted on the Mission Children's Toolbox, and I encourage you to go there and look that over. And this podcast is meant to give a little bit of context and background for that document. So thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Sure.
Do you want to just give us a little background about autism in general?
Well, as you know, Calvin, it's a very prevalent condition, at least 1% of the population. And there's so much public recognition, widespread concerns about it, so there's probably a much higher prevalence of not autism than there is of autism. But it's really an important responsibility, I think, of primary care to be involved in early recognition of autism spectrum disorder, since we know that early diagnosis and early intensive treatment can really change outcomes.
Great. Okay. And with that background, do you want to just let us know what tools there are to help primary care in delivering a timely initiation of a workup or a provisional diagnosis?
Yeah, sure. I think that the use of general developmental screens are clearly helpful in picking up early signs of speech and language delay and delays in social development. And those can sometimes be important red flags, delays in adaptive skills. So general developmental screening is obviously critically important. And then, of course, the use of autism-specific screening at 18 and 24 months has proven to be quite successful at picking up kids very early, and so I think it's important that that be done. We've also included in the toolkit something that you may find helpful and interesting, which is really an attempt to look at the specific criteria for autism in DSM-5 that are often a little vague and a little hard to interpret, and pegging those criteria to observations that a clinician may make in the clinic. And I think that can be helpful in just tuning in to some of the potential signs of autism. So a lot of the early recognition, the early diagnosis, is going to rest on screening, but also surveillance that is based on open-ended questions and skilled observation of play and of interaction in the clinical setting.
It really is an art. And just in my experience in primary care, I would say the majority of autistic children, you can almost get a sense that the diagnosis exists just by walking into the room. Even with a patient that you may not know. But I will say that in my experience as well, there have been a couple of kids who slip past my my observations a little longer than I would have liked. So I think this the additional document that will be posted on the Children's Toolbox will be helpful in increasing the sensitivity of those clinician observations.
Good, I hope so.
Okay, great. And then, what are the other tools that can help inform this diagnosis and something that primary care can help to pull together?
Well, I think it can be very helpful to get other perspectives. So, requesting relevant school records, a narrative report from a teacher can often be more valuable, say, than a Vanderbilt checklist, which may tell you something about some aspects of peer relations and school performance. But a teacher narrative can be quite helpful, And sometimes it provides an opportunity to explore different perspectives that you may be that you may be learning about the child. So I think gathering those kinds of records, making some inquiry about mental health concerns, including the potential for diagnosis of ADHD or social anxiety, depression. These are all important comorbid conditions quite commonly seen in young children with autism. And I think to be aware of those and to be inquiring about some of those is helpful.
And what about the situation where there's strong evidence that that the diagnosis of autism does not exist?
Interesting question. We do sometimes see children who are referred because somebody somewhere said maybe your child has autism, and it's just patently obvious to anybody who spends 2 minutes with the child that the child does not have autism. And so I suppose under those circumstances, I would say if it's absolutely clear to the primary care doctor that a child doesn't have autism, then by all means tell the parents that and see what sort of response you get.
Okay. And then what materials do you need and to make that first appointment with you as productive as possible?
Well, I think it would be very helpful to have relevant medical records. That might include, for example, the growth chart data. You know, when we see a child with autism symptoms who has macrocephaly, did that child go through a period of unusually rapid head growth in infancy? That can sometimes be a clue. So I think relevant medical records, certainly relevant subspecialty consults that may have been obtained. I think general developmental screening or autism-specific screening with the MCHAT.
Mm-hmm.
It's very helpful to actually see those results.
So why don't we move on to the referral criteria or the situations in which a referral is warranted to your clinic?
Yeah, so I'm looking at the co-management guideline here, and I think that these are largely cover the situations when to refer. Firstly, if the primary care doctor has diagnosed or suspects autism and is looking for confirmation, I think that that's probably the most common reason for referral. Sometimes there may be just a mild suspicion of autism on the part of the primary care doctor and you're needing further diagnostic evaluation, further clarity. I think that would be a very good referral. We will also take referrals for children who have an established autism diagnosis and you are looking for consultation regarding psychopharmacology management. We're always happy to provide that kind of care. And then children who have autism and associated disruptive behavior or associated mental health problems, you're looking for further assessment and management of those conditions, that's very much within the scope of the resources that we have available at the Huff Center.
Okay, great. And then with respect to co-management strategies, I understand that this is another example of where it's really individualized to the patient and depends on the circumstance.
I think that's right. There are many children with autism who were diagnosed through our program and children who've received a variety of multimodal treatments through our center and who have really established ongoing ties with the program in that way, and so even when things are going very well and they are stable, they may be inclined to check in every 6 to 12 months on follow-up. And I think under those circumstances, what we may be doing in the clinic probably very closely parallels what primary care doctors are doing. It's just important to be sensitive to the kinds of difficulties that children with autism may have as they get older, and I'm thinking here in particular of problems like the emergence of anxiety disorders, of depression, the association with school problems, and so there are kids who have more severe autism and associated disruptive behavior, and who may be on medications that that we are managing in our clinic and will continue to manage with close follow-up. And we have an array of specialists who focus on autism, including psychology, clinical social work, speech, and OT, as well as developmental pediatrics. And so there may be times where the particular issues that a child may be facing might lead them to come back to the Huff Center for more for more assistance in those issues. So as you say, it's highly individualized, and I think that we just have to be communicating well and effectively between subspecialists and primary care office, so that it's clear who's doing what.
Great, that sounds good. And then I gather there are some tools on the from the AAP that can help support the sort of ongoing care that primary care can provide.
Yes, there are. I think that the AAP Autism Toolkit, which I think you can reach through aap.org/autism, provides a lot of helpful information about the condition and about some of the ways in which primary care can really manage kids with autism effectively.
Great. Well, thanks for that synopsis regarding your services and the ways that your clinic can help. And I want to thank you personally, because I think your clinic does a phenomenal job, and the children of Western North Carolina are well served by your clinic.
Thank you very much, Kelvin.
Okay. So again, these tools that have been mentioned during this podcast will be posted, are posted on the Mission Children's Toolbox, and I encourage you to explore and put those to use. Thank you very much.